Hi everyone, I hope you're really well this week. Welcome to another episode of the Motherkind podcast with me, your host, Zoe Blasky, where each week I chat about all things motherhood and well-being. My mission with this podcast is to help you reconnect to you, to feel happier, more joyful, calmer, and more alive, whatever that looks like for you. So maybe this podcast is going to inspire you to look at your health and self-care. Maybe it's thinking about your career and making work work for you. Maybe it's looking at your relationships or your relationship with yourself and finally addressing that inner critic and making a commitment to being kinder to yourself. So I chat to all sorts of well-being experts and game changers to help you become your healthiest, happiest, and most alive version of you, because that is what I think is the most inspiring thing to become for our children. So on to this week's episode. It is with the lovely Izzy Judd, who I know many of you will already know and love. She is a mum of two, to Lola and Kit, and she's written a best-selling book called Dare to Dream, which was all about her fertility struggles. And Izzy has been a real champion and has been incredibly open talking about her and her husband Harry's struggles with conceiving their first child. So Izzy and I chat about fertility. We talk about how that experience changed her and how she has used it for good as a positive force in the world.
I feel I have a responsibility to tell the truth and to say what's happened, because nobody else seems to be saying that they're having difficulties. You know, I remember thinking I'm 30 and being embarrassed to go to a fertility clinic.
We talk about the challenges that she's facing today, parenting two little children, and how she's using mindfulness to support her mental health.
The biggest key for me when you talk about what does my mindfulness practice look like, it is getting myself back to the moment that I'm in right now. And right now, I'm safe, all is well, and I have to trust that moment.
So I hope you really enjoy the episode. If you did, as usual, please rate, review, and share. Here it is. So Izzy, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So Izzy and I have been emailing for a few months trying to find a date, and then you had to cancel and I had to cancel, and we've just ping-ponged. It's so lovely that you're here now.
Oh, thank you.
And we first met, didn't we, at Elle Wright's sort of book launch. It wasn't her official book launch,
yeah,
was it? With Emma Cannon.
Exactly.
Which was so lovely, wasn't it?
So lovely.
So we all sat in a circle and sent messages.
Oh,
yeah, sent. It was really beautiful.
It was. It was so intimate, and it's amazing how you can have a group of pretty much people that are basically strangers, you know, that don't know each other, suddenly have this moment all together. It was really magical, wasn't it?
I just find that, like, when we're given permission to take our masks off a bit,
yeah,
you can connect with strangers some ways that you haven't connected with friends for years, because you just come from the heart.
Yeah.
That's what I felt about that afternoon.
It was lovely.
So how are you doing?
Good. Yeah, I'm good. Life is busy. As you know, we just had to say goodbye to one of our fair babies, Murphy, who passed away. So it's been a bit of a quieter house recently.
Because Murphy was such an integral part to your whole journey.
Goodness, yeah. I mean, I got Murphy, so 11 years ago, when I was going through a really bad patch with anxiety and actually to a point where leaving the house was becoming a struggle. And so Harry was like, well, why don't we get a cat? You know, it's good therapy. And so I did this kind of search online about matching the right kind of breed to your personality.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I've seen those.
Ragdoll came up, which was Murphy. And so I went to Murphy, you know, to choose this kitten, and Murphy was the kitten. And he just had this extraordinary intuition. And, you know, I really feel he was sent to me for a reason at a time.
Definitely.
So it's been more than just a loss. There's been so many things that I've been through with that cat. So it's been a bit sad.
Do you feel like him passing now is like opening a new phase of your life?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's so interesting, isn't it? because I was looking back over photos of Murphy, because the day I had to put him to sleep, Harry was working in the show. He's dancing in the West End at the moment. I still find that funny, the fact that he's dancing when he's like a drummer. But anyway, and so in the evenings, once I put the children to bed, I'd always get Murphy. We'd have our time on the sofa. Suddenly that Sunday night was really quite lonely. So I started to look through all the photos. And all the photos kind of went through a symbol of time in my life and change and everything we'd gone through, and, you know, particularly around struggles for a family. You know, I've got a photo of Murphy literally with me through my miscarriage. He was there in my pregnancies when I was terrified about miscarrying. He was always by my tummy. He's been with Harry and I through most of our relationship, through different houses. And then since having the children, he'd sleep outside their bedroom doors.
Oh, no, I read that you'd put that on Instagram. Yeah, so sweet.
He just knew. And actually, the morning I knew he was really poorly, I couldn't find him. And he'd hidden under Lola's bed.
They do that, don't they?
Yeah. And I just, I don't know, I'm probably all a bit wacky like that. But it was almost his way. For me, it was like, you know, you have your children and here's Lola and she's safe. And it's my time to...
Oh, I'm sure that's what it was about. I'm the same. I always think there's a deeper meaning to be found in these things.
Yes. Yeah, I'm all for the deeper. You always go very deep, yeah.
My husband always says that to me. It's like, you always, everything doesn't have a meaning. I'm like, it does.
It does. Everything happens for a reason.
Exactly. I guess you're really well known for lots of different reasons, but in the motherhood world, you're really well known for your amazing work that you've done around fertility and continue to do, despite now having got your two beautiful children. And that's quite rare and unique, I think, that you want to keep this conversation going. So can we talk a bit about your journey, how it started and how that's weaved into how you are today and the things that you've learned along the way? I think would be really interesting for people to hear.
Yeah, so obviously Harry and I got married, and the next step was to start a
family. Did you always know you wanted to be a mum?
I always knew, yeah. I've grown up, I'm one of four. You know, being a mum was always what my career ambition was, to have a family. And I just never expected that not to happen. I just assumed, you know, Harry and I, young, fit.
There's a naivety in it as well. I was the same. Like, I mean, I had a different experience. I did get pregnant first time quite easily, but I was so naive that it might not happen that way.
Absolutely. And I think when you do suddenly find yourself faced with a reality that it might not happen, the things you're going through as a person, defining who you are, what if I don't become a mum, then what? And that was the biggest fear for me. That was the biggest, what if this doesn't happen? And we went through various different fertility treatments and like Clomid and things to try and get pregnant. And I did very much rush into, right, we need to fix this.
Because it was the first time, wasn't it, that you... So you got pregnant quite quickly, but then... I want to make sure I say this right. You miscarried, didn't you, your first baby?
So I didn't get pregnant quickly, naturally.
Okay.
So it was about... I'm just trying to think how long it must have been. A good few years before we decided to have IVF. And it was from the first round of IVF that I miscarried.
Okay.
Which was utterly devastating, because
I can't imagine.
You know, we miscarried at 7 weeks and 3 days, or but I had gone through so much to that moment. And you know, for anybody, the minute that you see a positive pregnancy test, in your head you're already a mum and you're projecting to all the things, from thinking about the nursery right through to names to, I don't know.
Yeah, just excited about it.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was utterly devastating. And I just remember thinking, like, how's that fair? You know, gone through all this. And, you know, as you were saying earlier, the kind of naivety, you know, Harry really felt that he didn't even think that that might happen and that miscarriage was even... You know, that naivety of, well, we've had IVF, so therefore, you know...
I think you always think it's not... Like, I've had two miscarriages, one in August last year and one in December. And even though I knew the stats, I just thought it wouldn't happen to me, which sounds so silly saying that out loud, but yeah. It really shook me.
Have your miscarriages happened since?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had Jessie really easily, like pregnant first time. Yeah. So I just assumed.
Yeah.
I think it's that assumption and the expectations that it would happen again the second time.
Yeah.
And then.
And all those questions when you think, you know, my body's done it.
Yeah.
You know, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah. I haven't really thought that way yet. I think because I have Jessie. It's very different. I cannot imagine if I hadn't had a child yet having had these two miscarriages. I think because I've got her to bring me back to my motherhood role. And, you know, I think the first one I was like, okay, this is pretty common.
Yeah.
And then the second one I was like, okay, wonder what's,
you
know, going on here.
Yeah.
And I haven't gone down the medical route or anything yet.
Yeah.
I'm just going to see what happens.
I think from what you're saying there, though, as well, it's, because of the online community and the fact that the conversations are happening, I think that is so positive because it makes you realise that actually you're really not alone.
Yeah, well, the work that you and many others are doing, for sure. Like, I've realised how common it is. I've realised that sometimes recurrent miscarriages just happen. It doesn't mean there's anything quote-unquote wrong.
Yeah.
Sometimes these things just
they do, but just happen. I think the impact of miscarriage is still a grief and it's still a loss. And I think, you know, that was something I really underestimated.
How was that grieving period for you?
I still think about, you know, that pregnancy. And
it was your first baby, wasn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, I still have moments where I wonder. And because they were all from the same kind of IVF batch, you know, Lola, Kit, I conceived naturally, but there were three frozen embryos. So one I miscarried, one was Lola, and then one that's in the freezer. That I actually went to see where they're kept, which was amazing.
Oh, that's
amazing,
so, what a great idea.
Well, I just wanted, in my head, I sort of visualised like a wall of freezers, like, but actually.
Never thought about it.
It's like a round cylinder. And obviously there's all sorts of locks and codes and keys and they kind of lifted off the lid and all this kind of dry ice came out. And then they pulled out the tube and it just said Judd and the number on it. And it was obviously surrounded by other people's embryos. And that moment I was like, should we just put it back now? Shall I just put it back? You know, it was that feeling of, you know, it's part of myself and Harry, and it's there. But it was nice to see where frozen embryos are kept. And
that's such a beautiful thing to do.
Yeah, it was lovely. And so I suppose I sort of think of Lola as one of three.
Mm.
And so went on to conceive Kit naturally, and so we still have one frozen embryo. You know, I find it difficult to sort of think, what will we do? Because that could have been Lola that they had picked that day.
Because I've never been through this process, obviously preparing for this, I've, you know, done a bit of research, but because I've never gone through that, I just haven't thought about things like that.
Mm.
That's such a huge question. Like, what do you do with that embryo?
Yeah. Oh, I know. And there are some, you know, I've got friends who have three or four, you know, if you're lucky enough to have had a very good cycle, a very good round. And it's a big question. And, you know, the clinics, they send you a letter at the end of each year asking you what you want to do. Do you want to, I mean, mine, it says allowed to perish, which just seems awful.
Gosh, that word.
You know, you want to continue storage or research or, you know.
Right, yeah.
There are, or donate, there's options. But, yeah, it is a big, big question. And, and what do you do?
Gosh, it's just the things that you... you just never thought about.
I think there's a lot with IVF that people don't realise, and I think that's why I felt really strongly about sort of sharing our
story. I think that's why what you've done is so powerful, because you're in the public eye, you know. And I remember you talked about that, about why you made this decision to go public with it, and I was really moved with what you said about how triggering you'd found it when you read another announcement, and you wanted people to know the journey that you'd been on to get there.
100%, because we had our wedding in Hello, and sort of it becomes like family, you know, because they celebrate all your milestones with you. And so when it came to the pregnancy announcement, obviously I had gone through all we'd been through and suffered a miscarriage and had IVF. And you know, I just said to Harry, first of all, I felt really uncomfortable announcing anything at all.
Because how were you feeling emotionally at this point?
It wasn't more, I was really scared at each stage of the pregnancy, you know, to get past the time when I had the miscarriage, but then to get to 12 weeks, to get to 16 weeks, to 20, you know, it was this constant, like, hurdle race.
And were you allowing yourself, you know, your book's called Dare to Dream, were you allowing yourself to dream at that point?
I think when we were talking about the first miscarriage and the grief, I have never let myself enjoy the pregnancy like I did that very first time with Lola or Kit, because, you know, you just don't know until they're here in your arms. But then you're into a whole other realm of of stuff. So
we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. So I guess really for Harry and I, and actually when I think about it, when Lola was born, the emotion that came out of Harry was just, I've never seen him react in such a way.
And that's because he was, like, energetically holding his breath for 9 months.
Totally. And before.
Years, of course.
I think he had been so protecting me. And because I think he knew that that was, you know, he was a bit younger than me. A lot of his friends, they weren't even married. So he was at a slightly different time in his life, whereas a lot of my friends were having families. And so he was always able to kind of maintain a sort of calmness and it will happen kind of attitude. And I think he was holding it together for me.
Yeah.
And had to watch me, you know, going through fertility issues. I lost loads of confidence. It was such a miserable time for me, especially in the earlier stages before I kind of turned it around.
And, yeah, I want to talk to you about this quite a lot. Yeah, we'll talk about that shortly.
So, yeah, so when Lola was born, Harry just let it all go. He was just a mess.
And was Harry on board with the decision? Because we were talking about your decision to share when you'd announced the pregnancy, your struggle. Was Harry on board with that as well? Obviously he was, because you did it. But was he aboard straight away with being that honest?
Yeah, I mean, I just said, look, I feel like have a responsibility to tell the truth and to say what's happened, because nobody else seems to be saying that they're having difficulties. You know, I remember thinking I'm 30 and being embarrassed to go to a fertility clinic because I thought that people would think that I was too young to be there and that people that had IVF were, you know, 40. All this sort of,
but you just don't know.
Yeah. And so all of that, all of the reason I wanted to talk about it was, and also I'm not somebody really to shy away. I was proud that we had had IVF and I wanted to. I think it would have been so wrong not to have been absolutely truthful about what we've been through. And it was as a result of that that people started to write to me.
I was going
to
say, what was the response?
Yeah, I mean, not only people on social media, but friends and family, you know, who were now opening up and saying what they had been through. It almost gave people permission to talk about it. And, you know, I understand, because the amount of times, you know, I'd be somewhere and someone would say, how are you? And inside you're like, well, actually, I'm actually going through one of the hardest things. We're trying for a family and it's, you know, but it never feels like an appropriate time to say.
Yeah, I really relate to this, because obviously with last year, and I was actually really honest and open and told people, but a few times people definitely didn't know what to say to me. When I was there, I'd be like, how are you? They'd say like, mother kind's doing really well. And I'm like, yeah, but actually what you don't see on Instagram is that I've miscarried two babies. And I think sometimes I feel really, like you, I want to say what's really going on with me if it's appropriate. But I think I've noticed people find it really hard to know what to say, because it's just not in our...
No.
We're just new to this sort of, I guess, being way more honest than we ever have been about loads of things in society and, you know, conception and fertility being one of those. Did you notice that people didn't know how to start the conversation with you? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I relate that to literally going back to when I was 12 and my oldest brother, which I've spoken about, had a serious car accident. Rupert was left brain damaged. And I remember going back into school and friends not knowing what to say. And I remember feeling really uncomfortable because I felt different because, you know...
Your family had been through this huge trauma.
This huge trauma, but...
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stresses, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. And therapy is a space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. Therapy is just an incredible, safe, non-judgmental space. I absolutely love it. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which I think as busy mums is what we all need. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/motherkind today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/motherkind.
Maybe it's something now that with education and we need to be perhaps taught a little bit more about emotional questions like that. Because I think, I don't know about you, but my parents very much were brought up from a generation, stiff upper lip, you absolutely don't
show emotion.
Yeah,
well, they were off the back
emotion.
Of the Victorian style of parenting, which was exactly to show emotion is weak. You know, children's emotions need to be shut down was the lexicon.
Yeah.
And, you know, our parents' generation would have been the first where the research and evidence was just starting to come out that maybe wasn't the best way to go, but it was very new.
Exactly. So I think, again, you know, when you're talking to somebody about miscarriage or if they're having fertility struggles, I always say, you know, to just turn around and say, I don't know what to say, but I'm here to listen.
That's such a nice phrase. Yeah, I'm here for you.
Yeah, because we don't always know what to say. And sometimes I think we feel we need to say something and fill the gap and fill the silence. But I don't know about you, but my greatest friends are the ones I can sit in silence with.
Yeah.
And not say anything, and it's not awkward and it's not uncomfortable.
Yeah, totally.
And family and my friend are often like, because she's got two little ones, so she's like, we just enjoy some silence.
Just have a cup of tea in silence. I'm all up for that. I'm all up for that.
Yeah.
Totally. There's so much reverence in silence, actually, as well. What I wanted to ask you about was the journey that you went on.
Yeah.
So you talk so beautifully in the book about losing yourself through this. And then finding yourself again. And you say actually a stronger version of you than you ever had before. And I think that's such a hopeful message. And it's relevant to just not what you went through with fertility, but I think actually that idea of these challenges forcing us to look at everything, you talked about it almost like a brand new you, can be applied to so many challenges that mums listening will be going through. So could you talk to that a bit?
Yeah, and actually I think to myself now, being a mum, if I could be kind to myself the way I was when I made the decision to be kinder to myself when trying for a family. You know, the thing...
Well, that's motherkind's mission.
Yeah,
it's right, our message.
So, you know, the biggest lesson that I learnt was to say no to things, because I'm terrible at saying no. I'm like, just like my mum, she can't say no, and then complains about why she said yes.
I think that lots of people will relate to that.
And to really be selfish, and it became about Project Me and Project Baby, and that was what was most important.
And protecting your energy.
Yeah. You know, there are people that just sometimes are just not quite the right person to be around at that moment, you know. There's always the radiators and drains, aren't there?
Yeah.
You know, are around you. Or somebody might need something from you. And as a friend, you want to give it, but actually you're so exhausted and depleted yourself that it's difficult to then give that. And I think that was a really important lesson, that I just had to put everything to one side and focus on what I needed to do to get me through IVF, basically. But prior to IVF, I did like a 6-month kind of detox of everything from nutrition to looking at my, obviously mentally, so doing lots of yoga, being around nature.
You got into mindfulness, didn't you?
Yeah, very much into mindfulness. As I mentioned earlier about the anxiety, mindfulness has been the thread that has kind of kept me going through any crisis or any change. And sometimes I forget that it's there and that I can actually use
it. What does your practice look like? How do you use mindfulness?
So the big thing for me, like that kind of, you know how sometimes you have those light bulb moments that might be very obvious to people, but for me it really wasn't. And it was that realization of how I lack ability to just be present. And, you know, especially in like extreme sort of anxiety periods that I've gone through, I'm always projecting fear, what ifs, what if that happens?
And that's what anxiety is, isn't it? Yeah. That's what it does to your mind.
But I remember being scared because people would talk about panic attacks, but I never felt it was a panic attack. I didn't have that kind of symptom. It was just this underlying constant feeling, and it would make me feel physically unwell, but constantly physically unwell. And so I read a book by Jonk about sin.
Master of coined the phrase mindfulness. Obviously didn't come up with the concept, but coined the phrase.
Yeah, exactly.
Him and his wife have got an amazing book for parents.
Yeah.
You read it?
Well, I'm in the process of stocking up on all my mindfulness research because I find it so fascinating. And, you know, especially now as well, being a mum, but also with children. You know, I think the biggest key for me when you talk about what does my mindfulness practice look like, it is getting myself back to the moment that I'm in right now. And right now, I am safe, all is well, and I have to trust that moment.
Well, it's all that's real.
Yes.
That's what I, you know, because I teach a bit of mindfulness to my coaching clients. Mm-hmm. And I often say that, you know, let's come back to reality, because all that's real is that you and I are sat in this room together. Everything else is either gone or it's a projection and we have no idea what's going to happen.
And I think
it's so hard to do that because our minds are actually wired to do the opposite.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes the present moment is not that exciting. Like, this is obviously really exciting.
Yeah.
We're quite present. I feel like we're both quite present.
Yeah.
But if we're, like, playing with the kids, you know, that's when I really notice my mind goes.
Yes.
When I'm sat with Jessie, like, building Lego for the 90th time, I find my mind projecting something normally bad into the future.
Yeah, and because we're so good at teaching ourselves that pattern that it becomes a normal pattern. And it's learning to stop it before you go along with the story that you're creating.
Yeah, catching it. Yeah.
But I think, you know, mindfulness is one of those words. It's thrown about a lot. It's, you know, kind of fashionable. And
I think it should be called awarefulness. I had someone on the podcast who said that. I was like, that's such... It's like mindfulness for me is about not over-identifying with my mind.
Mm.
And so the name, I don't know, I've always thought it's really interesting.
It is.
It's called that.
And there's, I think, so many different layers to it. But it's certainly not sitting in a room trying to meditate and stop your mind from thinking. And I think people often think, oh, I couldn't do that. I couldn't sit for 10 minutes and not think of anything. Well, you're never going to not think of anything because our minds are trained.
Yeah, no one can do that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Maybe the Dalai Lama.
I'm sure some people can.
Yeah.
But it is the thing that I've always gone back to.
And so when you talked about this idea of really losing yourself, can you describe a bit what that felt like? Because I suspect there will be mums, I know there are because I get messages every day, who feel like that, that through something that's happened, maybe through a traumatic birth or fertility or, you know, something in life or just the struggles of motherhood, they've lost themselves. And I think it'd be helpful to hear you describe how that felt and some of the, you know, talked about mindfulness, talked about nutrition, but then how it felt on the other side of that.
I mean, when it came to fertility, it was confidence that I lost in myself.
Were you a confident person before?
I mean, you know, like I have a performing background. I'm a violinist. You know, I'd go out on stage and perform in front of how many people and meet all sorts of different people all around the world. You know, when I was touring with the band I was in, Escala, which just feels like a lifetime ago. You know, so I suppose in order to do that, you've got to have a certain element of confidence. I'm quite content within my own company, and a big night out's not really my idea. I think, was it, you know, this whole JOMO, you know, joy of missing out, that's totally me.
Yeah, me too, yeah. It didn't used to be, but it is now.
But I think I've always been a bit like that. But that feeling of losing yourself, I think one of the hardest things, and how I could relate that to motherhood, is it is the impact that what is going on around you has on your relationship. So whether that's with your husband, whether that's with your friends, family, you know, suddenly your main focus is on your children. And like when you're going through fertility, your main focus is on trying to get pregnant. So you lose a sense of perspective. You're so focused on the routine of that moment with your child and that day and that moment that you lose, I think, sense of perspective. Mm. And actually, one of the things, because I'm exploring now doing about a lot more mindfulness for mums and children and everything else, and something I was taught, which actually I found really helpful, and it really related to when I was potty training Lola, and I thought it was actually going mad. It was just one of those times where I was, because I was like, right, I'm not going to leave the house, and you know, you wait all day and then they pee and then it's done and they've peed in the wrong place and you've got to wait for another, you know, whatever it is, for them to go again. But it's this whole concept of, like, you know, if you look at your phone and you zoom in and out with your finger, looking at the bigger picture, you know, there you are sat in your house and you forget that there's this whole life and this whole, everything's going on around you, but your perspective is so on this one moment and it's so important at that time. And actually, I think I lose sense of perspective.
I think loads of mums do, and loads of mums will relate to that. And I think it's just such an interesting balance, isn't it, between why we were talking about being present with the moment.
Yeah.
Because what I think is lovely about mindfulness is this idea that every moment will bring something different. Mm. And I think I've noticed that where I've struggled most in my parenting so far is when I've forgotten that. Mm. When I feel like, because she's in my bed, she's always going to be in my bed, or because she's having tantrums, she's always going to have tantrums. And actually, I think when I remember this too shall pass, like, nothing is permanent. Mm. And that's such a cornerstone of mindfulness, isn't it? That there's no permanence to anything, or any feeling even comes and goes, and things come and go. And that's what I've found has really helped with mindfulness.
Yeah,
it's so just true. Remembering that, like, she's having a tantrum in this moment, but in an hour, we're all going to feel, it really helps me to not over-identify with it. And
And children let go and forgive very quickly.
I always say that. People are like, how do I need to learn mindfulness as a mum? I'm like, just watch your child.
That's
they do it.
And that's the thing, is that you think, how do we change so much that we lose that sense of our childhood within us, you know, that inner child?
Yeah.
And actually they are, they're your greatest teacher. And that's, you know, where mindfulness with children is so lovely, because where as an adult you might go, I'm not going to stop and stare at that flower, or you know, whatever it might be, but with a child, they're discovering it for the first time. I remember when Lola saw a rainbow for the first time.
Oh, it's so cute,
you know. And it was just like, yeah, this is amazing. The world's amazing. And they're letting us see it all again for the first time if we allow ourselves to notice everything again.
Yeah. So learning that practice through your fertility challenges. And what else did you do to find Izzy again? Because you talk about finding this brand new you, and I was so interested in what you said.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was, when it came to fertility, there was an acceptance that we were not going to be the couple that were going to fall pregnant quickly, and that this was going to take time.
Did you need to grieve that story and let go of that? Or did that feel quite easy to let go of?
I think it was just more suddenly, you know, sometimes you just have those moments where you're just like, okay, right, okay, so.
I had that this morning.
Really?
I was getting Jessie ready for nursery, and I realised that she was going to be four soon and I still wasn't pregnant. And I just thought, oh, God. I'm going to be one of those mums that just has a really big age gap, maybe. Or maybe I'm just going to be one of those. Yeah. It was so weird. It just dropped in. Like, I imagine a little bit about what you're talking about.
That's
now.
That's it.
You just dropped in, that realisation.
Yeah. And acceptance.
Yeah.
I think that was a big moment for me, and important to go through, because I think I had stopped enjoying this sort of being married to Harry, because I was just so obsessed about wanting to start a family, that, you know, I lost the fact that we were actually married and happy.
There was a moment, wasn't there, you talk about in the book.
I've spoken about it so many times, because it was such this sort of moment that I wasn't pregnant again. It was another month, and came downstairs and just sort of fell to the floor almost, but more in like just, you know, I couldn't cry, I didn't want to shout, I just was pretty numb. And, you know, Harry just looked at me and just went, worst case scenario, it's you and me. And it was that feeling of you and yes, and you make me so happy. And actually, I'd rather you and me than not have that at all. Of course, I wanted a family. Of course, we wanted children together. But it was like, yeah, you are enough, and I've been neglecting you. And I think the same in motherhood, you know, because
you're
I mean, I'm still learning that because
same.
Your focus is on your children and you just don't have the energy to then invest in another person when you have very little left for yourself and you're putting everything into your children.
See, I'm the same, but I think I sort of do me at the top. And I know that sounds quite weird to say, but I know that I have to look after myself first, yeah. or else I'm basically not yeah. a great parent. So there's me, and then there's Jessie, and then there's, if I'm honest, in reality, I give more time and energy to motherkind. And then Guy is like if I think about what I actually do, my behaviours,
yeah.
like I will work next to the sofa on him most nights
yeah.
and sort of ignore him.
Yeah.
And I had this realisation the other day, I was like, oh my God, I'm yeah. actually prioritising my business over my marriage.
Yeah.
I need to change this. If someone had asked me, I said, no, of course I put my husband, you know, maybe one or two. But yeah. actually my behaviour is that
yeah.
I'm just not investing enough in my marriage right now.
In fact, I've had a few of those kind of crisis moments almost, because Harry had surgery on his back at the end of last year. And I had so not been thinking about it at all, and then suddenly I found myself in the hospital bedroom and he was basically having surgery, and I was like, oh my goodness, like before we were married, what preparation I would have gone through with all this. And I hadn't really thought about it. I mean, I had, but not like,
yeah, I know what you
could
mean.
I do yeah. to make him,
how can you,
oh, and then yeah. I felt so guilty, you know, so guilty. But that is, you know, motherhood. And actually my mum, because I was talking to her the other day and I said, Mum, it's the guilt, this feeling. And she was like, oh, welcome to motherhood. It never goes. You know, she just kind of said it like that.
What do you feel guilty about?
Oh, I mean, everything from what food have I given them today?
Do you?
Just have I organised what food they're having today? Or have I planned, have I got everything in the, whatever that might be, right through to World Book Day when you're the one that's forgotten to get an outfit, or, you know, through to the bigger stuff of how am I doing as this job as being a mum? How am I handling Lola's new 3-nager stage? And, you know, have I given enough attention to Kit? Lola got much more attention because it was just her. And, you know, all these constant battles and guilt of, but I want something for myself. And, you know, everything that I'm sure every mum is going through, but it is by far the hardest time I have gone through has been since becoming a mum, even compared to the fertility struggles. And I think that's often where, you know, if people might think, but you've gone on to have your family.
Mm.
But what I learnt in that time through going through the struggles gave me a deeper understanding of myself to then use now.
Do you think you're a very different mother now because of the struggles that you went through?
I think what you go through shapes you as a person anyway, doesn't it? And I don't think...
You'd already been through a lot if you had that trauma when you were 12 as well.
Yeah. I think it's probably more that I don't know. It's really hard to know if you're a different parent.
Well, because you only know who you are now.
Yeah, and I think I'd always be cautious and I'd always be probably a little bit neurotic. And
but it sounds like you found some tools like mindfulness and nutrition that have really held you.
100%. And, you know, for me, exercise is really important.
What do you do?
I like to run and I like, you know, a good sort of 40-minute session in the gym. And I have to do it to clear my head. And it is my time. And it's a time when you're really present because you're just thinking about what you're doing and it's just your moment. So that... And an early night.
I'm a massive fan of an early night.
Early night. Get the sleep. It's that constant, oh, but I've got this time to myself and I've got all this stuff to do. But for me, if I don't sleep, that is when it all
I prioritise sleep
wrong.
Over everything else. I've been quite good at that. And yeah. I've been known to do like a 7:30 p.m.
Yeah.
bedtime.
Yeah. I'm all for that. All for that. Yeah. And drink lots of water. That's my other thing. That helps me... I don't know, feel a bit more energetic.
Well, yeah, that's... Yeah. And lack of water can trigger anxiety as well.
Yeah, it is.
So yeah. I see loads of mums just not keeping themselves hydrated enough. I mean, it's like an active job, this.
Fill up your bottle, your water bottle in the morning, Mummy, when you're doing your children's. Fill one up for you.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, if someone is listening to this and they might be going through fertility or any other challenge, actually, what would you want them to know from your experience and what you've been through?
I think it's really important to trust your own instinct on things, and that I think relates to fertility struggles, you know, right through to being a mum, and just to really believe in what you truly think, how you feel things are best for you. You know, I wrote about fertility struggles and things I did to help me, but that might not be what another person would connect to. But I think it's really stopping and asking yourself what it is you need, almost to nourish yourself.
I think that question is so powerful. What do I need?
Yeah.
When I work with clients, they have to ask themselves that every day.
Yeah.
I think we're not used to asking it, especially when, as mums, every minute of every day is jam-packed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you ask yourself that often, that question?
No. I'm working on it because I really want to give Lola and Kit the tools that perhaps I didn't have, especially now with mental health being so much more prevalent and the world that we're living in. It's a different place, and I want to give them the tools. So I do a lot of exercises with Lola. Kit's still a little bit little, but I find it helps both of us.
It's so nice to do it together, isn't it? So what sort of things will you do?
In the evening, we always do I put my hand on my heart and one hand on her heart, and she puts... And we just say, you know, may I be happy, may I be healthy, may I be calm. And then I always end with, may we sleep well.
Get that in there.
So I do that with Lola, but also a deep breath. Like, often we'll go...
I do that
and
with Jessie.
I've watched Lola now do it in the heat of, like, when she's having a touch, she will do it herself.
Jessie the same.
Yeah.
And apparently she said to someone at nursery the other day who was upset, just take a really deep breath. Oh. And the teacher just didn't know where that had come from.
Yeah.
But I think intuitively, as humans, when we pick up on these tools that work, we just know they work. And I think that's what it is with her. I think she knows she feels better when she just takes a breath. So she just does it.
Kids are amazing. Like, I'm really learning stuff with Lola at the moment. And I've also understood that actually she does need an explanation. So if I'm cross with her for doing something, actually she just doesn't understand why it is what she's doing might be not quite right. And actually, if I sit down and explain to her why I don't want her to take all the wooden blocks out that I've just put away because we're about to leave the house and da-da-da, then she'll understand. And actually, to think of it that way, and that's been quite a big change for us recently.
Yeah, there's just so much to learn on this journey, isn't it? I keep using that word. It's so cheesy, but it's so true.
I know.
It really is. The final question is another big question.
Yeah.
Which is, if you could give just one gift to all the mums in the whole world, what would you give them?
Well, I was thinking about this when you asked me this question that you ask all your guests. And I was thinking, what would I want to give my mum? You know, what would the gift be for my mum?
That's such a nice way of thinking about it.
And I think if it was me, I'd just want to tell my mum that she's done a great job. You know, that she's been great.
I would say the same to my mum.
You know, don't worry, mum, you've done a great job.
And isn't it important for us to remind ourselves of that?
Yeah. Oh, because
our kids
no one says thank you to you at the end of the day.
Our kids are going to say that about us.
Yeah.
Sure, the kids would say that about most of their mums.
Yeah.
But I think it's so easy to forget that.
Yeah.
So everyone listening, just remind yourselves you are doing
a great job.
Thanks, Izzy.
Thank you.
So that's it. Thank you for listening to the episode. I hope you really enjoyed it. And if you did, please do leave a review on iTunes. It does make a massive difference to the number of mums that we can reach with this content. If you were listening to that episode thinking about one of your friends that they might benefit from what we were chatting about, then just tag them in on Instagram. My bio will include the link to the podcast so they can find it really easily from there. People often tell me they're desperate to share it with their friends. So If that's you, then please do. I feel like the guests that we have on the podcast, their wisdom just deserves to be heard far and wide. So help me make that happen. I'd be very grateful. And also, if you want to send me any comments or thoughts about the episode, then please pop over onto Instagram at motherkind_Zoe. And also, just to let you know about my coaching. So I do work one-on-one with mums on my program, which is a three-month program called Reconnect to You. So if you want to work with me on taking your power back in any area of your life, then please do get in touch. Just drop me an email, zoe@motherkind.co, or look on the website, www.motherkind.co. That's it, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. Take care.